Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Christy Rosa. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with C. Ola Landgren, MD, PhD, Professor of Medicine, Chief of the Myeloma Program in the Division of Hematology, and leader of the Experimental Therapeutics Program at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center of the University of Miami Health System, to discuss the Phase 2 Manhattan trial examining a novel quadruplet regimen in patients with newly diagnosed multiple myeloma. The trial examined whether the addition of daratumumab to weekly carfilzomib plus lenalidomide and dexamethasone would result in high rates of minimal residual disease negativity in the absence of high-dose chemotherapy and transplant. Investigators also sought to establish the safety of the regimen. Data showed that the MRD negativity rate of 40% or higher following up to 8 cycles of the weekly combination was achieved by 71% of 41 patients, meeting the primary endpoint of the trial. Moreover, the median time to MRD negativity was 6 treatment cycles. The 4-drug regimen was also found to elicit an overall response rate of 100% and a very good partial response or complete response rate of 95%. For individual patients, the response achieved with the regimen was noted to deepen over time. At a median of 11 months of follow-up, the 1-year progression-free survival rate with the regimen was 98%, with the 1-year overall survival rate of 100%. In terms of safety, the most common grade 3 or 4 adverse effects experienced with the combination included neutropenia, rash, and lung infection. Serious toxicities associated with the regimen were reported in 18% of patients. However, no deaths were reported. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Landgren further discussed the trial, the potential of the 4-drug regimen in this population, and the next steps for this research. What inspired the launch of the Phase 2 Manhattan trial examining a weekly 4-drug regimen in patients with newly diagnosed multiple myeloma, and what was the goal of this research?
Daratumumab was FDA approved in November of 2015, and in 2016, there were combinations approved, and it just continued to evolve, including even newly diagnosed patients with the immunomodulatory drugs. Immediately, people started thinking, could it be added even to the standard backbones with PI, IMiD, and steroids? So the first combination that was presented was the VRD regimen, which is the first 3-drug combination that Dana-Farber developed in 2008 and published 2010. We worked on the second generation 3-drug combination with PI, IMiD, steroid, and we published this back in 2015. This is the KOD regimen. So we built on that platform. We have seen in our hands that the KOD regimen is more effective in terms of deeper responses, much higher MOD rates. And we have worked to see if we could optimize KOD therapy with weekly instead of biweekly. And I think very importantly, to see how the fluid regimen could be optimized as well as the anticoagulation regimen. There have been studies showing if you give KOD with too much intravenous fluid that you run into congestive heart failure. And also because the KOD regimen is a very effective therapy that you could also trigger hypercoagulation with thrombosis as a complication.
You mentioned several trials and combinations that set the stage for this work. What would you say sets this effort apart?
So we have extensive experience with all these types of regimens. So we decided to do a once a week dosing with KOD with 56 milligrams per meter square of Kyprolis or carfilzomib. And then to do our standard optimized fluid regimen with only 250 milliliters of IV saline before the first dose and stop all the IV fluid after that. And then put patients on an oral factor 10A tablet once a day for anticoagulation prophylaxis. So that's kind of the backbone of the story that we saw this very effective therapy, and we were aware that the fluid could be a problem and you have to have the right anticoagulation. We then partnered with daratumumab, and we gave it for 8 cycles. And we show that after 8 cycles of this regimen, you see as a best response 71% of MRD negativity. And if you look at the older studies that have been done, for example, with VRd, and also more recent studies, actually, VRd for 6 cycles with a bone marrow transplantation has shown around 20% MRD negativity in the newly diagnosed patients. So that's substantially lower. And of course, that's also with the bone marrow transplantation included. The Griffin study that was published in the Blood Journal last year had in the experimental arm VRd for 6 cycles, including daratumumab. So this was VRd with daratumumab for 6 cycles plus the bone marrow transplantation, 51% MRD negativity. We're not talking about a randomized study comparing these different regimens. We're looking at different studies. So I really caution anyone who looks at the details that a randomized study would be mandated in order to do a formal comparison. But I think there is some interesting signal here that there is a lot of important work that needs to be done going forward in terms of consolidating and expanding these results, because I think this is real.
That's very exciting. Could you expand on the methods used and maybe what the patient population looked like?
So the study was designed to test the weekly KRd with daratumumab for 8 cycles and to see how deep of a response can you achieve in what proportion of patients. And the primary endpoint was to rule out 40% MRD negativity after these 8 cycles. And we were able to show that the right answer is 71%. Patients were allowed to go for bone marrow transplantation after the 8 cycles. They were encouraged to collect stem cells after 4 to 6 cycles of therapy. But because the study was 8 cycles of therapy, and that was really what the study included, and to see how many patients could reach MRD negativity, there was no mandatory transplant in this study. So that actually means that patients who were not looking to go for a transplant, or patients who even were not transplant candidates, could be included in this study. At the same time, patients who wanted to do a transplant, or patients who were candidates for transplant, could be enrolled on the study. And the fact that we treated both groups of patients and we show 71% MRD negativity, I think it, beyond the actual primary endpoint, also raises a very important question. Should we really think about transplant-eligible or transplant-ineligible patients, or should we just think about newly diagnosed patients and offer every patient the best possible therapy? And I actually think the answer to that is yes, we should.
Are there any patients for whom you would not give this regimen?
I think the reason why you would not give a powerful therapy like this is that the patient is maybe frail, has underlying cardiovascular problems, has other health issues, et cetera. So I would say frail patients versus not frail patients, forget about age, this type of therapy is very, very appropriate. But you have to make sure that the patient doesn't have an underlying cardiovascular disease or any other severe underlying comorbidity that would make the patient vulnerable for this therapy.
And then, of course, with any multi-drug regimen, there's a concern that any added benefit may come at the price of added toxicity. What was the tolerability of this regimen, and what factors should be considered to ensure the appropriate management of patients who receive it?
I think you are raising a very important point. Are there new things you need to look after when you start combining multiple drugs and you have newer drugs, and how does that work? I think I treated patients for more than 20 years with myeloma. I have seen very many different drugs. I'm involved in a lot of drug development. One thing that I think is sometimes a little bit overlooked is the attention to detail for the clinical management, how things are delivered, and all the other surrounding things, such as different types of prophylactic medications, as well as fluid administration and careful assessment of patients. Many times people tend to forget about it. I think the older drugs, they were less effective, and they were at the same time maybe a little bit easier to give. You could just give it, and that's kind of what you did. But the newer drugs, they are more effective, they are better, but many of them take more attention from the doctor. And I already pointed out in the beginning, you have to have good anticoagulation if you're going to use good drugs, because good drugs, for example, to kill myeloma cells, when they kill many myeloma cells, they also trigger the coagulation system. So if you're going to go in and kill a lot of myeloma cells, you don't want to cause a new problem in terms of blood clots for the patient. So if you just give aspirin, you run a very high risk that that could happen. Instead, if you give an oral factor 10A inhibitor, you don't run into these problems. So the doctor needs to really be on top of the game and know what is needed. If you're going to deliver these good drugs, you also need to have the right supportive drugs. The fluid is the same thing. If you give too much fluid, if you give half a liter of fluid before and after the infusions with carfilzomib, of course you're going to run into congestive heart failure. If you even gave just fluid to a person once a week without myeloma, without any other drugs, you would also see congestive heart failure. So of course that's going to happen. So I think you have to give the optimal fluid, you have to have the right prophylactic medicine. So I think it's like if you have a fast car, if you have the same brakes in the car as you have in a standard car, when you start driving fast, you won't be able to stop. You're going to have problems. The whole system has to be calibrated throughout. So the attention to detail is very, very important.
A very good point. Are there any next steps planned for this research?
Yes. These results are the best we have ever seen in the newly diagnosed setting. And beyond the efficacy with the high rate of MRD negativity, we also do not see the high rate of peripheral neuropathy that you do see with bortezomib. That's also one thing that I think doctors kind of get used to this and kind of a little bit, no one is hiding it, no one is lying about it, but because it happens all the time, you kind of stop thinking about it. So if you go back and look through the data, the bortezomib studies have been around for like 15 years or so. A lot of patients that are treated with this therapy, maybe up to half the patients have chronic peripheral neuropathy in fingers and toes, which is something they will have to manage for the rest of their life. It impacts every day. You have to be on medications, and some people even have to be on some walkers or things like that. Not every patient will have it, but it's not a trivial proportion of patients that have this. So with the KOD regimen, you do not see that because carfilzomib does not cause the peripheral neuropathy. So I think that's an important aspect. So for that reason, we felt that this has to go forward and be validated and tested in a large study. So we have already launched a large randomized study called the ADVANCE study. That's a multicenter study that's open for newly diagnosed patients, which compares this new therapy to standard of care. And that would be the way to test this regimen in a multicenter fashion in a randomized way.
And what would you say are the clinical implications of these data? What should your colleagues take away from all of this?
I think this shows that you can achieve very deep responses in patients with modern therapy in the absence of a bone marrow transplantation. I think once a week dosing is a very reasonable dosing schedule for a defined period of time. I don't know going forward if every patient will need 8 cycles. If you look at the time to reaching MRD negativity, there are patients who reach MRD negativity after actually 1 or 2, 3 or 4, 5 or 6 or so cycles. The median time is around 6 cycles. So thinking about getting an injection, an infusion once a week, 3 weeks on and 1 week off for this number of cycles, compared to what the other options are, including a bone marrow transplantation with all the toxicities, all the sustained peripheral neuropathy. I think if you look at the value proposition of getting a modern 4-drug combination with such a high rate of MRD negativity, I think it really pushes the field forward and it provides a new option for patients who are newly diagnosed with myeloma. There is data showing that if you use the best drugs in every line of therapy, that means that you will lose fewer patients for the next line, meaning that if the disease relapses and comes back, if they were not treated properly, some patients will have so much disease coming back, so they won't even make it to the next line. So I think the emphasis on using optimal drugs in every line is there, and it starts with the first line. And here you have a very effective therapy. The last thing I want to say is that this is not for every patient. And it's probably, unfortunately, not for every doctor either, because you would have to pay attention to detail. You have to be on top of the anticoagulation. You have to be on top of the IV fluids. I, in my practice, would do an echo of the heart. I would do an EKG for every patient before I start them on therapy. And I also would assess the blood pressure. I would adjust that. If it's too high, I would treat that. If there are any concerns, that I would be more careful with these types of therapies. But if you don't see that, which is true for very many patients, and the patient has no other underlying comorbidity, I think this is an excellent therapy.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.